Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now, and more than 60 others, can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 a month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. And now, you'll start to see Fable and Folly Network shows are offering bonus content to all existing and new supporters. Find exclusive new episodes from shows like Where the Stars Fell, The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, and Civilized. Plus, early access to new episodes of Midnight Burger, all still entirely ad-free. The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dum Dums and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 4 weekly podcasts: Dum Dums and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, and Warhammer 40,000 The Valentine Heresy, as well as 4 event podcasts with mini-series releases at staggered intervals: Curse Code and Crown, Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumdumdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please join the Dum Dums and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumdumdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dum Dums and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pod. Get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dum Dums and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. That's D-U-M-B, D-U-M-B-D-I-C-E. One more time for the mortals in the back, redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back, initiates, to the Mythos Mysteries, a live play Pulp Cthulhu podcast where improvisers and comedians venture into dangers beyond their wildest imaginings. I am H.P. Helmfirth, your host on this journey into darkness. The Mystery Punchers have made their way backstage for the King in Yellow, only to discover the director is the evil reverend from their past. Richter was desperate to attend, but was shocked to discover the show was sold out. Red agreed to help the older man break into the theater, and Adrian bought tickets, but no one asked him. So venture forth with us, dear friends, into the mythos.
Richter, your eyes lock onto a man you haven't seen in years, and as you see admittedly much older and clearly having lived a much rougher life, Reverend Michael Thomas, you immediately flash on a memory of him entering Helmfirth Curiosities the day of the church massacre. Back then, you remember looking at a number of books that you'd spread out across the desk, and you were deep into your research about the medallion that Sally had given you and shown you, as well as a deep sense of foreboding that what Ingrid and you had were attempting to dig up here might already be in progress, might be too far gone. I think in your studies to this point, there had always been a sense of deeply buried secrets that you were trying to uncover and understand. The fact that one of them was in full motion was not something either of you had ever really experienced before. You can think of it a bit as being archaeologists digging up ancient secrets, and then suddenly you realize, uh-oh, this is actually a rolling ball. This isn't in the past. Yeah. Like, this was meant to be like an exploratory uncover history, not, oh shit, it's
uncovering a secret plot.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Modern Richter, we're going to use your modern stats for this, but can you roll me a flashback check, please? This will be, we finally get to use it, baby, library use.
And I'm quite good at that. That was a success.
To the surprise of no one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The surprise of the listener who just began listening today. Hi, Frederick. Yes.
My firearms are 20. Goddamn better have high library use.
Just got to get to a scenario where you're throwing books like the page master, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So adventure. Richter, you've discovered that the entombed eye piece on this medallion has been added later. This was one of the first things you discovered. The medallion itself seems to be older. It does seem to be mass produced, but mass produced takes on, I think, a different tone in like the late teens, early 20s. You get the sense that this has been made from a mold, but not like the way we would think of that in modern terms, where it's like, you know, there's just a fucking assembly line of evil being like, here's all these medallions. but still fine craftsmanship. But you do get the sense that similar to participation trophies that we all as 80s kids would have received that have thus left us with a crippling sense of inability to succeed in the world. Where it's like a standard trophy with like an insignia for whatever the fuck it is glued into it. It's a bit of that vibe. It doesn't seem like the entombed eye itself has much to do necessarily with the medallion itself. from your success, you get the sense that this medallion is again, part of a set. And one thing that you and Ingrid... this is perhaps an abstract question, but of the two of you, let's say one of you was more interested in who was doing it and one of you is more interested in what was being done. I got to assume you are more I'm more interested in the mechanics of ritual and of these things. And she was more into the idea of like, who are the people who believed in this, or would it be vice versa? Or do you think neither of you would have had that interest?
I think it's closer to neither. I think maybe in a more roundabout way, Richter might skew more towards the who. Because I think we touched on it a little bit, but Ingrid was more capable than Richter was. So I think it mattered less to her the who was doing it, because the who for her could ostensibly be her. Whereas for Richter, he, I think, lacked the capability or the know-how or the strength or whatever. And so sometimes I think there was a question of like, well, if I can't do this, then who could? Who was doing these things kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. I also, in those terms, I think I like the idea that in a way you were kind of like, this is a dumb analogy, but you were kind of her sous chef. Like, she was the chef.
Yeah.
You were the sous chef. So yeah. As a result... if she needed like I don't understand why this thing works the way it does. Maybe the answer is in the people. You go deal with that. So it was less that Richter himself was like, I must know, and more that was the kind of work you ended up doing. I like the idea of it being a bit of a minor inferiority complex of like, if I can understand that, then maybe I can too.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, great. So with that in mind, then, you get the sense, Richter, from your sort of previous studies and from kind of what you and Ingrid have discovered, that these are likely part of a ritual, and it's likely part of a set. So one not being there might disrupt things, it might not. But that this, particularly given the fact that a child had one, seems to imply that everyone associated with this ritual likely has one, and they might be some kind of focus. So you're considering this when Reverend Michael Thomas enters your shop. Modern Richter doesn't know this, but then Richter, you've actually you're about as friendly with Thomas as you are with almost anyone in town. He's frequented the shop quite a bit. And I think you've likely had some lighthearted as Richter is, interactions around the nature of religion. But Thomas has been an apt customer and kind of almost a semi-regular here. Very charismatic, very laid back. I think has expressed vague interest. He's been better at discussing these things than you would assume from a man of the cloth. You hear the jingle of the bell. I assume you like fold the book closed or pull something innocuous over it, or do you think you leave your research out, given that very few people seem to care about this sort of stuff?
I'd leave it out.
Okay.
I think I'm hot shit. I think I'm the only one in town who knows this stuff.
Cool. I will say, and this, sorry, I should have led with this. This is after your conversation with Sally, where you told her not to go to the ritual. So there is some concern that you have.
Okay. So that, okay. So maybe then I would close it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just because this is pertaining to a potential cult scenario in Helmfirth, so yep. Yeah, I would close it then.
Great,
thank you for reminding me of that.
Oh yeah, it took me a second too. He approaches the counter and he just says, "Mr. Richter, it's been a while. I haven't seen you around town. Is everything all right? You keeping well? Do you have an interesting shipment, perhaps?"
Just the usual. Good, Herr Thomas. I think this is happening in real time. The Richter just like, as always, not being able to come up with like a good lie or like a good like cover story kind of thing. So it's just very much involved in some research. That is all.
Well. Good. I mean, just continue to discover the mysteries of the universe, right?
Quite, yes. How can I help you here, Thomas?
I was wondering if if you recall, I had asked you to look into an object called the blind eye. I understand it's a bit of harmless superstition, but despite being a man of the cloth, I still have my little superstitions, my little hang-ups. Have you managed to find this object for me?
His mention of this blind eye, is that connected in any way to what I've been researching around the medallion?
It isn't. As he mentions it, you do remember that he did ask you to make some inquiries into this a while ago. Can you roll me, please? Let's go with just an old school occult check, if you've got that.
Oh, buddy, have I got it. You know how hard it is for me to fail an occult check?
I mean, you tell me, guy who just rolled dice.
That is a hard success. I've got 90 in a cult.
I was going to expect you to be like, do you know how hard it is? And I just did it.
Look, I've seen
50-50 going that way.
Yeah, I've seen Tyler fail some pretty extraordinary checks in Blood and Syrup. So, you know, I was ready for anything.
The great thing about a cult is that if I do fail it, the chance is that it's a fumble. Like if I fail it, I fail it fucking hard.
Yeah. Yeah, you can only cheese it. You can't slightly bump it. Okay, great. So, you managed to find the blind eye. You ordered it, and it arrived. It is an ancient artifact that Richter, in your research, you have found associated with something known as the one who waits in the shadows, or in the darkness, rather, not the shadows. Mm-hmm. But at this point in your research, that's pretty vague. Again, I think we've used Ghostbusters a few times as a good baseline for this. This is a name that's come up a couple times, but isn't, you know, it's not like, it's Gozer. It's like, this is some vague icon. And Tyler, can you roll me another one, please? This is a Mythos check. This is Mythos, modern okay. Richter reckoning with the memory that he is living right now.
That is a success. Probably a hard success. I don't have the breakdown in front of me. I've just got like the one threshold, but this is less than half of that. So I think that counts as a hard success.
It does, yes. Okay. So, again, I know this is a bit of timey-wimey nonsense, but modern Richter is reliving this memory in a flash after seeing the Reverend again. Mm. So you kind of, as yourself in a weird like Scrooge way, recognize the iconography on the blind eye as actually matching the iconography of the statue you broke in the museum. Okay. You recognize it as perhaps being misnamed and perhaps being misattributed. You at the time assumed it was related to the entombed eye, given that it also has eye in the name, but upon looking at it, you realize this horrible twisted-headed creature that you remember shattering, it's that twisted in a shape that looks roughly like an eye. So you recognize it as being related to Nyarlathotep. Jesus, I really should have picked an easier fucking old one to pronounce. But, yes, you recognize it as related to that.
Gonna say an easy to pronounce old one, then we're not doing Cthulhu. It's gotta be impossible.
God damn right. Steve, the old one. Hey guys, I'm gonna end humanity. Oh, Steve, you got me. Okay, goodbye.
I'm the casual Elder Terror.
Yeah, he's just played by John Goodman. Be like, I'm just friendly and I'm very good.
I would watch the shit out of that movie.
Just go watch Old Brother, We're Out There. I guess it's basically the same thing. Cool. So at the time, though, Richter, younger man Richter, you have this object in your possession. You did order it for the Reverend, but that was before Sally came to you with concerns about a ritual. In the past, did you give it to him or did you conceal it?
I gave it to him, but with some pretty stern warnings, I think. I knew something was going on. But as far as I recall, at this point, I have no reason not to trust Michael Thomas. And in fact, you're saying I'm kind of friendly towards him.
Except that Sally has suggested that a ritual is going to... We're at a really interesting breaking point for Richter. Also, in terms of our like past narrative, of Sally has warned you something's going to happen at the church. So now
at the church. Okay.
So you are now suspicious of him, but also again, a lot of things are happening all at once. But this is basically the run up to Richter storming the church with a gun, which is something we still haven't really reckoned with.
Yeah.
So this is basically in. I mean, Dexter did this every other fucking episode, but this is kind of a Bond meeting the Bond villain moment, where suddenly you realize that perhaps this guy that you've been friendly with and have genuinely enjoyed chatting with, suddenly his interest in the occult isn't, oh, thank God there's someone else in this town who wants to talk about this. It's, oh, fuck, have I actually been helping
the
serial killer the whole time? shit. So there's a bit of that duality happening. And again, it is worth noting that this is pre sort of mental fragmenting Richter. So you are much sharper at this point in history.
Right.
So yes, it's a bit of him not necessarily being aware of you. We'll check that in a second. But yes, for Richter's mindset, this guy might actually be up to something nefarious.
Then I think I'll lie to him as a sort of lie of omission. He's asking about the
blind eye.
And I will say, I did look into that for you. It hasn't arrived yet. However, there is some information surrounding it. Not much, mind you. Mention of one who waits in the dark. Now, this could be relating to a number of mythical and historical figures, and purely fictional figures as well. What do you plan on using this for? I just want to make sure you're not being taken for a ride or anything like that, Michael Thomas.
Okay. So, Tyler, I technically need you to roll me a fast talk check, but I think that'll, quite frankly, fuck you based on your stats.
Yes, that's correct.
I guess what I'm looking for is, like, this is related to your job. Because basically this is what I want to try and capture is this is something that you aren't the worst at, because this is close enough to your profession that you can theoretically get away with it, but that also has an element of danger to it.
Should he roll against his luck?
Maybe. That's not bad. Are you an education or an int guy, Tyler?
Let's have a quick scroll up the page and see. Both.
Okay, let's go with int then, because I like, Ryan, I like where your head's at, except that the only challenge is young man Richter would have theoretically different luck than current Richter, who's blown a bunch of it on like murder. So let's go with int, because this is something that you are comfortable with. It's just...
Okay.
Yeah.
With an 83, that's a success.
Whoa!
So you see Thomas's expression shift a little bit. At this point, I think he'd be more of the King in Yellow director. Him is very much in a Charlie Manson vein. I think this era is like current Mark Ruffalo. So just like could look incredibly vicious if he like really wanted to, but has that kind of easy charm about him, and he's like strikingly handsome. Future is like if Mark Ruffalo broke bad.
Damn, that would be in his cult.
I know. Just rigging the deck here. Yeah.
That's how Scientology worked.
Yeah. So his expression shifts a little bit from incredibly warm to slightly taken aback that you're asking questions about it. But it's just a quick like shadow crosses his face, and then says, "Oh damn, that's a very good roll." 00 is, sorry, I roll dice very rarely in this game.
00 on the hundreds?
Yeah.
Is a zero at the front. So you're in the 0 to 10.
Extreme success, baby.
Okay.
So he just kind of nods and smiles and says, as you know, it's tough running a congregation in a small town like this. The Church of Contemplation is a bit of an experiment, Mr. Richter. I don't mind telling you. I have a slightly different belief in how to approach the teachings of the church than a lot of my companions. You see, I believe that when your texts, like the ones you're referring to, speak of the one who waits in the dark. We always think of that as evil, as menacing. But what if it isn't? What if the one who waits in the dark is our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, waiting for the stone to be rolled away, waiting before he can return into the light, bring all of us into the light? I believe that some of these old, ancient objects might have modern meaning to us, and particularly coming off of the horrors of everything that oh, fuck, we're pre-Great War. So in such a time of great political unrest in the world, I mean, you, of course, from yourself coming from a place that we may well be in conflict with soon, anything that can show us that goodness can come from darkness is, I think, very important right now. So it is a shame. I'm holding a rather important sermon later today that I sincerely hope to be able to lead the flock with, but suppose I'll have to do without. But that's fine. I'll come visit you in a couple of days, Mr. Richter. I feel as though we will have a lot to discuss then.
Yeah, good. I look forward to chatting with you once again, Michael Thomas. It is always a pleasure. Yeah.
Yes, excellent. Tell me, Mr. Richter, you yourself are a seeker of truths, correct?
Yeah, I would describe myself as a seeker of truths, yeah.
Hmm. We should talk in a few days' time. I would ask, there's one other item you could obtain, though. You've been of great help so far. The items you provided for me have been a tremendous help in my work. All I would ask is if you can find some fabric that could perhaps double as a hood, maybe cut some eyes in it. I think I could show you something rather exciting.
I'll see what I can do. It's rather unusual, not really my wheelhouse, but...
And he looks around at your curiosity shop, and he's like, on the contrary, I believe it very much is. Well, until then, Mr. Richter, and thank you again for looking into the blind eye. Yeah. And with that, he smiles and leaves your shop.
Thanks for supporting the Fable and Folly Network. Here's another show we know you'll love.
Greetings, I'm Bernard.
And I'm Magenta. You might know us from such hit podcasts as Madame Magenta, Sonus Mystica.
Horror anthology Magenta Presents.
Or season 3 of Mockery Manor.
We're everywhere.
And we're spreading faster than an STD in an old folks' home, because now we have a brand new podcast. Wham!
Wham! It's a fun acronym that stands for We Have a Movie.
Oh, it's not just an acronym, Bernard.
It's not?
It's a chat podcast where we invent smash hit Hollywood movies based on popular toys.
If you like the Barbie movie and you want to see similar treatments of your favourite childhood toys, I'll wager you'll like Wham! With episodes on Polly Pocket, Rubik's Cube, Game Boy, Strawberry Shortcake,
Furby, Connect Four, and lots of other nostalgia bait. But it's not just for adults who still like toys. It's a podcast for anyone who loves Hollywood tropes and comedy.
And quantum mechanics.
And BDSM.
Wham! Has something for everyone, but is still specifically about movies.
That's Wham! W-H-A-M. You know, like when Batman punches someone.
Yes.
Adam West. That Batman.
Exactly.
Not the Christopher Nolan one.
No.
Download it anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's what the world needs, another movie podcast.
Was that clear? Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned quantum mechanics.
Hello, everyone. This is Tyler Hewitt, just coming at you with a little special offer for you. You know, if you're a fan of what we're doing here on the show, then we have, to borrow a phrase from Jerry Holkins, a patron-oriented experience tailored just for you. If you go to
patreon.com/dumbdumbdice,
you can sign up and get a bunch of special features that we're not really going to make available to anyone else, so do that. Now. Well, not right now, but, you know.
A few minutes later, you hear a tingle outside the shop of Bell's, and a kind of a old old fella comes out walking with a cane, and he enters the shop and just beelines it straight for you. And this guy, he looks pretty rough. He's like a what the fuck's his name? It's Clancy
Brown.
I want to say Clancy Brown. Yeah,
it's Clancy Brown.
Great. Yeah, exactly. Clancy Brown. It kind of comes over and says,
"Good evening. I believe you ordered some ice cream." And he puts a small package down on the table with a metallic clang. And then he tips his hat to you and leaves. And Richter, you open the paper bag to reveal the gun you ordered, because regardless of what the pastor said, something bad's going to happen to this town tonight, and you'll be good goddamned if you're going to let the mystery punchers face it alone.
Okay.
So looking down at the gun, looking down at the medallion, you kind of look back out on the street to see Reverend Michael Thomas staring at you from the parkette across from the store. All of this flashes before your eyes, before you see the man himself. Last time you saw him, you were shooting at him as you ran up the aisle of the church. A grin spreads beneath his thick woolly mustache as he watches the people step out onto the stage. He hasn't seen the three of you yet. What do you do?
Go ahead, Tyler.
I was about to ask, am I the only one who recognizes him?
Claire and Ryan, you guys can roll me, please, a history check. One thing that I kind of want to play with here is that kids looking at adults, a lot of adults, like to my head, everyone on TV when I was a kid was the same age. They were roughly 40-something. Homer Simpson, as it turns out, is like 36. So
yeah.
We can all go fuck ourselves. but even Darth Vader is like apparently like I think he's like 35 or something in A New Hope. But in my head, he's like, no, that's what an adult sounds like, James Earl Jones. So I think for Red, you have a very distinct memory of like evil Reverend, but
yeah,
it, you know. And Adrian. I mean, good luck.
I mean, that is a most spectacular fail. Like, my history is 5. There's no way I'm a...
Okay, interesting fact. My history is also 5, but I rolled a 16. And that's close enough that I will spend the 11 luck to recognize the Reverend.
Yep. You see the man who... and Adrian, it's one of those moments where, like... all of your kind of fractured self clarifies to a point. You remember seeing him trying desperately to drop blood onto Sally's hood. And you know for a fact that this is the same man.
So I just want to be clear. Can you paint a picture of where we are versus where he
is? That was my question.
100%. Yeah. So you've come in through the stage door. So you've come in through the back of the theater. You've passed like an empty office and dressing rooms, and you've come into the backstage. So you're behind the flat that's down. He is in the wings to your right, looking at the two actors who have just stepped out onto the stage. So he is close by, staring out at the stage with a smile on his face.
Cool. If I were to, this is a Ryan question, and then we'll get to the Addy question. But if I were to storm towards him, would the audience see me or would I stay hidden?
You would stay hidden because he's not on stage. He's watching what's happening on stage.
Great. Then Addy, who at his core knows this man is bad and is linked with the Entombed Eye, who he believes everyone involved with needs to die, would take his hand off of the ray gun and draw his weird runic inscribed knife. And then basically he would just stalk forwards, then this would be prison level shit. Like grab below chin, just lower back over and over again.
Richter, would you try and stop him or would you just be sort of caught in a wave of memory?
Richter, I mean, I have like a very like decisive few things that I want to do, but if I'm maybe...
Let's say both of you are doing them at the same time.
Richter, if this man is backstage and speaking to the actors, if he has anything to do with this play cannot go on stage. Like, he cannot take another group of people from the town of Helmfirth. Richter's looking for a fire alarm.
Ooh. At this point in time, there wouldn't be one.
No, okay.
You would just yell fire, and it was illegal to do that in the theater unless there was legitimately a fire. So, like, people in this era,
Richter is a fire alarm.
Yeah, realistically, though, like, people were trained to, like, fucking leave if anyone yelled fire. So that is entirely possible.
Yeah. I think we talked about Richter smoking a pipe, right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, he'll take out a book of matches and start a fire. And while he's, like, striking the book of matches and, like, lighting, I don't know, some, like, theater rope or some shit on fire, he's just shouting, fire! Fire in the theater, everyone out!
I need you to please roll a sanity check first.
I like how Red's just seeing both of these things happen. And
Red's watching a play.
Yeah, well, I mean, this does track, though, because it's like the two people who are more attuned to the spoopiness are like, oh, shit, occult stuff. And Red's like, I do not care for this backstage. Yeah.
This director seems kind of shitty.
Yeah.
I rolled close to my limit as well. Let's see. Yeah, I'm going to spend all but five of my luck to make that a success.
Okay. You go to light the match, but just it occurs to you that if you do, you won't get to see the King in Yellow, and you really fucking want to see the King in Yellow. And then that extra, like, back part of your brain clicks over, which is like, yeah, that's exactly what the King in Yellow would want me to think. Light the match, toss it. So, yes, a fire begins. It's the 1930s. Everything's a fucking death trap. You start yelling fire. Adrian, you stalk towards the Reverend. He turns. Because you're not doing this quietly. You're, like, storming.
I think him, he wouldn't have stopped for, like, he'd be quiet enough. Because I think Addy does have experience in, like,
prison shipping.
What we know, like, motherfuckers killed a lot of people. And, yeah, like, if you want to make sure they're dead, this is, like, cold, angry Addy. This would be the, like, walk forward quietly, but Terminator style. Yeah. And just take him out.
Amazing. So you stalk forward. He's smiling maniacally as he stares at the stage. If you're not doing it loudly, he doesn't pay attention because he's watching what happens. And Red, you see all this happening, and it's almost like you're in slow motion and they're in fast motion. He's yelling fire. You can start to hear screams of like fire, fire. You see, or I guess this is as he's lighting it. So give that a second. Addy's like storming forward in murder mode. And you just hear with odd clarity from the stage, please take off your mask. We all must see what you look like. And then a blood-curdling scream and, for lack of a better term, a squelching noise. And then you hear screams of fire, fire, and then screams of abject terror and horror. And Addy, you grab the Reverend, who looks at you with, and then sees Richter and Red, and he just grins at you as you slide the blade into him and says, "Too late." As you just proceed to fucking pincushion him, Ryan, describe what happens to your old nemesis, Reverend Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I don't know if any of you have ever seen the what was that? Where it was Deadliest Warrior was where they would do tests on gel dummies, and there was one episode where they brought in the Navy SEALs and they had a guy demonstrate how effective their knives were.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always thought that, like, when you stabbed a guy, you would stab him once really hard, and what I learned was instead, you stab so quickly and ruthlessly while holding them that your knife blurs in your hands, and then they just kind of turn to goo in the middle. And I think it's just like the first three or four are just punching in and out of the back. And then on the fifth one, it's like he manages to crunch through the spine until the knife is almost coming out the front. And then he'll keep going till, like, there's a splatter out the front of the man, and then he'll drop him, expecting him to catch on fire, because that's what this knife is supposed to do.
Cool. As he's losing consciousness from the multi-stab. He's just still staring at the blade, and he just like, and it's one of those like, as someone's dying, their brain kind of shuts off in a weird way. He just kind of looks at you confused and says, "Corbett gave you the knife I gave him?" And then his bottom half falls off. Meanwhile, people are screaming fire, but they're also just straight up screaming as the actor in the yellow robe and mask cracks the ingenue in half. And Addy, as you continue to stab, you see that her hand is at the edge of the mask. And she's pulling, but it's not a mask. It's a face. And the robe is less robe and more tentacle. And this thing begins to just fucking slaughter audience. What do you yell to your companions?
I think Addy would just yell, "No more monsters!" And then he would draw the ray gun and open fire.
This episode of the Mythos Mysteries features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at the Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Claire Blackwood at Claire Blackwood on Twitter, and Keeper Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode's sound was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra. And the Mythos Mysteries show logo was created by Decapitated Marker at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are Dark Alleys and Sentinel by Kai Engel. And our ads use the tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, JAHZZAR. And all of their music is available at freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are dumdumdice. And on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. We have merchandise available at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. And most importantly, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. All hail the Mythos.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, Long Long, The Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grahams, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lord of Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Chet Awesome Laser, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
The world has still ended.
Darcy was a cafeteria worker.
Do you see that minotaur sitting out in the food court?
What minotaur?
Just an ordinary, everyday human, probably.
Egerton, you didn't even need a fairy cake. Why did you eat a fairy cake?
Because I stress eat sometimes.
Egerton was a PR flack for the Imperial government.
This extremely devastating explosion was, in fact, a celebration.
He's a flightless fairy with a sweet tooth.
There was some zombies, but Blatt blew them up. I climbed a tree.
And we're skipping ahead. Yeah.
Blatt used to be a filing clerk.
I'll pneumatic tube it up, sir.
Now he's discovering the secrets of his half-demon heritage, like his ability to summon a soul-bound weapon.
Oh, you're here to destroy time, eh? Well, eat bazooka!
Three normal dweebs, rescued from the end of the world and sent on a last-ditch quest to save all of reality.
There is a way to stop the shattering, but we need you three.
The End of Time and Other Bothers, an improvised fantasy role-playing game set in the world of Alba Salix. Find it in your favorite podcast app or visit otherbothers.com.
There's no evil, so you're welcome.
Flawless logic.
Oh, boy.